Hey everybody, Stu Smith here going live. Hope you are doing well this Monday morning, first day of spring. Can't believe it. Winter is over. It's a nice thing, but sometimes the spring season comes in pretty chilly. In fact, today was 25 degrees for our first day of spring, which we've had much warmer February days. But hey, you do what you can. So this week, what we're doing, this is our last week of our winter lift cycle. So that means we are testing. And what are we testing? We are testing everything that we did this winter, along with certain events that are not necessarily strength events, but more kind of a load-bearing durability event. So on top of PST as well. We're going to do a PST this week. We'll do just see what we need to work on the most. But we'll test squats and deadlifts, shuttle runs, bodyweight bench, 20-pound pull-ups, a mile and a half. We'll do a four-mile run. We'll do a four-mile ruck. We'll do a 1,000-meter swim as well as a 4,000-yard swim with fins. So there's a lot to test. And the reason why we're testing all that spread throughout the week is we just want to see how we need to focus on the spring. So what we kind of do, and I wrote an article on this, I'll share this with you. I call it the tactical groundhog method. So it's a tactical groundhog week. So check this out. This is a fun article I wrote a while back. Actually, I wrote it last year about this time. And what it is, you know how the Groundhog Day few weeks ago, I guess, came out, sees its shadow, and then we're supposed to have six more weeks of winter, or we have spring's coming early. I don't know, whatever the rule is. So what we're doing is we're assessing ourselves to determine what we need to focus on, either as a group primarily, or if there are some individuals in that group, which there always are, that need to focus more on strength versus cows and cardio, or there's people that are solid on their strength and need to focus more on cows and cardio. So we'll kind of use the spring cycle as a way to address both groups, and we just make small adjustments to the training cycle depending on what they need to focus on the most. So that's what we're doing with the Tactical Groundhog Week. So just so happens to be Hell Week right now, going on at SEAL training. They started last night with Breakout and been up all night and have started their first day of what Hell Week is. Of course, it's 6 a.m. there, so they're probably eating breakfast, maybe their first meal of Hell Week. And that's really how you get through Hell Week. You go from one meal to the next. So now, you know, every 6 hours, you get a meal. So suck it up for 6 hours, get a chance to take a break and eat. And it's, you need it. You need that food and drink for energy. You need to eat as many calories as you can, drink your water, get electrolytes. All of those things are critical to your performance in the next 6 hours. Then you got to do it again. So just think of it as you're stopping off for a fuel stop. You know, the extra calories that you eat are also going to help you create body heat to keep you warm. So it is essential to getting as much calories as you can. Something I would do is after I was eating the regular meal, I would just fill up on peanuts and peanut butter, things with a high fat content, Put butter on everything, salt on everything, and just really add a lot of calories to that day because you need it to get through such an event that is really a test. And it's kind of like our test. This is, you know, like this is Groundhog Week for us, where we're just testing all of the strength and, you know, elements of fitness. Put it this way, we are testing the elements of fitness, where Buds is testing events. So we try to train all of our elements of fitness that we need to be a better tactical athlete: strength, power, speed, agility, flexibility, mobility, endurance, muscle, stamina, grip. You know, all of those are critical to how you're going to get through any spec ops training, any military training, as well as just be an asset in certain situations when you're no longer serving, but you can still do things that will make you an asset in emergency situations. And that's really what this whole program's all about: seasonal tactical fitness periodization. It is focusing on building the elements of fitness so you can handle all of the events that you are about to endure in whatever training that is, whether that is a timed run, a timed swim, a ruck, a PT test, log PT, you know, other load-bearing activities. You know, and then you put it all together in the grand finale of challenges. And this 120-hour event is one of those things that is very challenging to endure. It's also very challenging to prepare for, because there's a certain level of activity that your body can handle in training that you don't want to necessarily put it through in training. You want to build up a certain level of work capacity and durability that you can handle whatever that is put in front of you, as long as you have food, hydration, and electrolytes. You got to add those three constantly, and then be a good team player, because you're not going to get through this by yourself. So there's a lot to unwrap there. With that, happy to take some questions. And we'll discuss whether it's the elements of fitness or it's the events of fitness. Don't care. But you should know the difference and train specifically for both. So we have, let's talk about nutrition. What does a typical week look like for you versus when you were training for Buds? Well, 30 years ago, Yeah, 30 years ago, we went through Hell Week last year. So 31 years ago, I was going through Hell Week. My nutrition has changed significantly. Because back then, I could eat whatever I wanted, and it was hard to put on weight. Now, I can just look at food and put on weight. So my calorie, or I should say, my need to watch my diet has greatly changed. You know, and you're going to feel it too. You know, when you get older, you're going to realize that, huh, I can't outwork my diet anymore. You know, I can't go out on Friday night and have, you know, 20 barbecue wings and, you know, pitchers of beer and one, not feel bad, and two, not gain weight. So that might have been in my 20s, whereas, you know, once you turn 30, 35, 40, it really hits you hard, and then 50, it's out of control. So my diet has changed significantly. I typically try to keep my calories down to about 2,000 a day. Though when I'm working out harder, I'll probably pick it up to about 2,500. you know, especially on days when I do two workouts in a day, like this morning, did a moderate workout, hard test. And then this afternoon I'll run again and swim. I'll swim right after this show and then go run in the afternoon when it's, you know, in the 50s or 60s, a little warmer. So I will probably eat a little more today. So it really kind of depends on what I'm doing in that day on how I eat. Like yesterday was my day off. All I did was walk and walk my dog and stretch. So my calorie intake was much less. I had a very small breakfast, salad, had a couple of meatballs with very little spaghetti and another salad. So yeah, my diet has changed a lot. And it has to, you know, otherwise I just, you know, I can put on 20 pounds in a couple of months now if I really tried. All I got to do is look at weights and look at food. And when I eat them, I'm really going to put on weight. But that's just me. You'll get there too if you're a hard gainer. I was a hard gainer, man. I tried everything I could to gain weight when I was a teenager and early 20s. And then by 22, I was where I needed to be, about 6 foot, 205, somewhere around there, leaned out to 195 when I went through Buds. And I'm at 6 feet, 205 now. So trying to lean out to get to 195 again. And those last 10 pounds are just my challenge of every year. But usually by the spring and summer, I do a lot better because I kind of drop the weights a little bit and I do a lot more running and high rep stuff. And I tend to burn more calories that way. That's just me though. I was trying to buy your Cows and Cardio book yesterday, wondering why it asked for my address if it is the ebook version on a discount code not working. Yeah, discount code is Live15, or you can use Military15. I think the 20 is expired. Try to get it back up. I couldn't do it. So it's just Live15 is a 15% off. It's asking for your billing address because you got to input your credit card. And it's going to ask you for your billing address, unless you do by PayPal, and then it's a lot easier. But if you have to make sure you didn't order the book. The book is going to ask for a shipping address. So it's real easy. At StuSmithFitness.com, the first letters of the title tell you what it is. It's either a book or it's an ebook. Make sure you are not missing the details. But yeah, if you're coming from overseas, I would not buy the book, mainly because it's expensive. Shipping is like $20 just to get a book to you. It's shipping is just as much as the book or more. Stu, you do so much for recruits and candidates, making sure they're all set up and doing well. How are you doing though? Ready for baseball season? You watching the WBC? Yes. Yes, I am watching some baseball. It's all good. Feeling good. I'm feeling really good. In fact, I tested out today with almost got 16 of my body weight bench, which I got 15. I just probably 15 and 3/4 of the next lift. And last, I needed help on the last 2 inches. But I got 16 or 15 of 205, which I was real happy. I got 20 pull-ups in, last week. And then I did 15, with 20 pounds on today. And later today, I'm going to run and swim for that test to see how I am on those. Usually the swim's pretty good. I can usually wrap up a sub-8, even without working that hard. And then the runs always tough. If I can get a 10:30, I'm really happy. 7-minute miles in me are kind of a thing now. So as long as I can keep it at 7, I'm pretty happy. Sub 7 requires a little more effort, and after a winter lift cycle, it's probably not going to happen. But sub 7 will happen by the summer for me. So there you go. Yeah, I'm good. Very excited about baseball season. It's just fun to watch. But thanks for asking. Let's see. You guys got any more? Did you ever get rolled for anything at Buds? If so, what did you have to do to pass? Yeah, I did get rolled for an injury in third phase. So I hurt my knee. I think I was just going up a dune. I might have been fireman carrying a guy up the dune. I think that's when I felt it not do something normal. And I was out for about 8 weeks. So I didn't have to do anything to pass because I didn't really fail anything. So I just had to heal. And then I had to start third phase over at the beginning, which I think we were in the third week of third phase, like right before the island going out. So I had to redo land nav again, which was no big deal. I mean, I did pass it the first time. It was much easier not limping through the land nav course, though, because I was limping for a couple of weeks after that knee, and then finally it just ate me up. So knee injury rolled me. But it is what it is. It's all had a purpose. It's probably a dumb question, but why did motivators encourage guys to start running 45 to 60 miles a week leading up to Buds? What was that rationale for cardio leg durability? You know, I don't disagree with that mileage. I mean, I would say I'm probably on a lower end of that. I'm probably 25 to 45 range. And if you're going to do it with a fewer miles, my advice is to run all those miles fast. So you need to be running 7-minute miles for your 4-mile timed runs and above, and 6-minute miles for your 2 miles and less. So it really is about leg durability, to be honest with you, because you're going to be running a lot when you're out there. However, I've known guys who ran 50 miles a week and failed because they ran 50 miles a week way too slow and never passed a 4-mile timed run. So, I mean, there are both ends of that spectrum. And I've known guys who only ran 20, 25 miles a week and crushed every run at Buds. So it really kind of depends on your athletic history as to whether or not you need that kind of volume. Sometimes the bigger guys don't necessarily need that kind of volume because they have a lot of durability from maybe the weights and the former sprinting, football, rugby type legs that they have. They're already pretty durable. But yeah. Personally, I probably wouldn't run over 50. I'd probably keep it between 40 and 45 at the high end. That is my opinion. Now, I have a way to train, not the only way to train, and I'm not knocking anybody who gives you that advice because that advice makes sense too. But there's what I'm saying is there's no one answer for everybody. I think everybody has a different running style, different running needs. You know, people who grew up sprinting all their life probably already have a good amount of durability where they don't necessarily need a lot of long, slow distance runs to add to that. So, anyway, there's a lot of information out there, and really, to be honest with you, you just have to find out what works for you. how you're feeling. You know, every time I run over 50 miles, I'm going to injure myself. I've done it many, many times, and it's not fun. And I get way too skinny. Though right now, probably not a bad idea if I want to lose weight. If I'm going to lose weight, I'm going to run my ass off and probably do 50 miles a week if I could. I may try that once. I may try that one summer just to test it out, see how I handle it at this age. Do you suggest doing cows and cardio book with the block periodization model 3-to-1? Why don't you just get the block periodization model? I mean, you can. I mean, you can do the cows and cardio every, you know, for 3 weeks and go for a lift every fourth week if you so choose. Or you can get the actual programs that have that block periodization already built in. It really doesn't matter. It matters depending on where you are in your strength gains. Because really the reason why we started doing that block periodization in the spring and summer was because people were afraid after 12 weeks of just doing cows and cardio that they wouldn't be strong. And if they really struggled during the winter lift cycle, putting on some mass and gains, it was an issue for them. A lot of people didn't have issues and they could go right through it almost like a linear progression through the spring and summer cows and cardio without having to lift. And maybe throwing in a supplemental lift every, you know, once or twice a week just to maintain stuff. But, you know, the block periodization model enables you to address that as part of a system versus, you know, almost like a secondary workout at the end of a day when you feel like you need to also lift after doing a bunch of push-ups, you go do some bench press and overhead stuff. So it really kind of depends, you know, and a lot of times my answer to that, it depends, is assess yourself. You know, are you strong enough already? And are you always strong? You know, there's a lot of people who are strong, but they had to work really hard to get strong. And 6 weeks or 12 weeks away from lifting is going to make them lose a lot of strength. Whereas someone like myself is, you know, I don't lift weights for a year, and it takes me about a month or 6 weeks to get back to my old one rep maxes. And I never really lost a lot because I'm still doing cows and cardio, or cows, the like push-ups and pull-ups that are still, you know, you throw a weight vest on there, it's almost like you're lifting weights. So there's a lot of different answers to that, but I think that is the way I would do it. Either way would work. Do you have any advice for guys who want to get really good at land navigation and terrain association for your guys who have gone SFAS or CAG selection? What hard skill prep did they do for it? Yeah, a lot of rucking, a lot of running, you know, just building up your leg endurance for that. So we would do a lot of run and leg PT workouts where, you know, we would run for, let's say, an hour. But every 5 minutes, you know, so these were fast 5 minute sets. So every 5 minutes, we would stop and do a minute worth of squats and a minute worth of lunges. And after an hour, you've accumulated, you know, 50 minutes of running and 10 minutes or so or more of cows and cardio of squats and lunges. And it's just a good way to build not only cardio endurance, but muscle stamina that goes with that. Now, I would definitely learn how to read a map and learn how to use a compass, learn how to take a heading or a bearing and then just go walk straight to that bearing. something you could do, something we did is we linked up with a high school orienteering team, which basically does land nav and does mixes it with cross country. And they were a big help. The guy who ran it was also a former military guy, friend of mine. And that was a big education for all of our guys. And it was fun because, you know, these 10th graders are teaching college plus, you know, age students. And, you know, some of them graduated college, you know, how to do land nav. And they were just very professional about it. And it was neat to see. So that's what we did. But there, you can find guys to help you with land nav. There are definitely people in the business to do that. Just got to look online. Lastly, do you think weighted beach runs should be an integral part of training for butts? Yes, we do it every week. And it's basically one of our leg days. So you ever see those cool pictures of us on running the beach? I put a post up on Instagram. That is a Friday beach run that we do. And it is usually 4 miles, but some guys will get there a little bit early and they'll do maybe six, some even do eight, mixed with a 4 mile run and a 4 mile ruck, or combination of six where they'll do 4 mile run and a 2 mile ruck. But yes, that we've progressed up to that, but running that soft sand with some weight, absolutely. Throwing in some squats and lunges with that, keep doing it. I think it's a very big part of how people can handle those first few weeks of first phase. The good news is, you know, after Hell Week, you won't be under a log and boat again, unless you really screw up. But it's not part of the curriculum, is what I'm saying. You know, in the first 3 or 4 weeks of buds, you are just constantly under a log and boat, and that is really what you have to build up for. When I talk about building durability, really has to last 4 weeks. After that, it turns into normal buds evolutions and tactical training. So, but you've probably whittled the class down from 150 down to 40, and then you learn all the fun stuff. Let's see. From Malaysia, just asking, does SEAL have any exercises or training with Royal Malaysian Navy SF Pascal? I'm sure they have. I just wasn't, usually that was probably for a West Coast team if they work with Malaysians. I will say this, we do have Malaysian students that came to the Naval Academy. In fact, one of our best rugby players was from was a international student from Malaysia, and he was awesome. And but he went, you know, after he graduated, he went back to Malaysia and was in his Navy, but he went through our Naval Academy for 4 years. But I don't know anything personal about the Malaysian SF, or if they even send students to SEAL training. Sometimes we'll have international students with our buds classes. In fact, we had South Koreans and Singaporeans there, so wouldn't surprise me if we've had Malaysians there in the past. And then they would work together on deployments too. That's usually how that works. For the hill days, what are your typical average pace of your participants when doing the runs, and what is the total distance you run? Good question. So our hill day, it takes us 2.25 miles, so 2.25 miles just to get to the hill. And we usually start that off with a mile of it being kind of warm-up squat pyramid type stuff. So we'll run 100 yards, do a squat. Run 100 yards, do two squats, work your way up to 10. And by the time you've done that, you've done about, 1,000 yards of running, which is what? Almost, not quite a mile, so 3/4 of a mile, roughly. a little over half, I guess. And then we got that next, you know, mile and a half roughly to get to the hill. We usually pick it up on that one. So we kind of go fast on the mile and a half. Then the hill is a quarter mile uphill, and it's a decent grade. I wouldn't say it's like impossible to run up, but it's one of those things, like if it was any longer, there'd be some quitters on the hill. I mean, it your heart rate is really up there. And we try to run those hills really fast, and we'll walk or slow jog down. Most of us kind of walk, especially if we're going to try to sprint the hill and try to get up there. And you know, it's a quarter mile, so we try to get up there and, you know, anywhere between, you know, 80 and 100 seconds, which is really hard to do. Some guys can go that fast like it's flat ground, which is pretty amazing. So we'll do 5 hills usually, sometimes 10, depending on where we are in our progression. We'll probably start off with 2 or 3 and build up to 5 by the time April's over, and then try to build up to 10 by the summer, when it's really hot too. And then we run back. And instead of running like 2 1/4 easy, what we'll do is we'll break that 2 1/4 into 400 meter sets or 800 meter sets, mixed with some squats and lunges thrown in there. So it turns into like 8 sets of 400s or 4 sets of 800s mixed with 20 squats, 10 lunges per leg. And you just do that until you're back to where we started. So that is our hill day. It's a good one. It works. Let's see. For me, I stepped away from main barbell movements to help improve my running and swimming. Smart. That's what I had to do as well. And I've seen great progress, even though I still do some sandbag and farmer carry work. Oh, yeah, you should still do that. I think those are great. Just log PT simulations. I don't know if you guys saw my latest article. You guys will love this one. This is probably one of my favorite workouts. And I posted it up here as the official Sand Baby Devil Murph. Oh, I never sent you guys the Tactical Groundhog Week. So I just sent the Tactical Groundhog Week, and I just sent the official Sand Baby Devil Murph workout, which is all about fireman carries and bear crawls and Sand Baby lunges and Sand Baby squats, sit-ups. So it basically simulates log PT with your own sandbag, and it mixes in some Murph and Devil's Mile events along with it. And we did that on Saturday. And I won't lie, I still feel a little bit of that from Saturday. And a lot of guys did. And you'll see. Check out that link. It's a hard workout. I want you guys to try it at some point. We're doing it again on this Saturday as part of our assessment week, just to see. There's 2 assessments I like to do. 1, can you do it? Because it takes about 2 hours. 2, can you do it and not be sore 5 days later or even 2 days later? Because here's where it matters. You know, some of those events are like a log PT session at Bud's. I mean, some of these workouts are like an event at Bud's. And you, let's say you have log PT on Wednesday, but you have a 4-mile timed run on Friday. You have a 2-mile ocean swim with big scuba fins on Thursday. So how are your legs feeling by the end of the week on that 4-mile timed run after all these boat PT, log PT, swim with fins, and then you got a 4-mile timed run maybe after lunch one day where you've also done O courses and, you know, some kind of grinder PT that morning? Are you able to do a 4-mile time run on tired legs? That's when it matters. So that's what I'm assessing. And that's one of the reasons why we're going to do that test again on Saturday, and then on Monday we're going to do a 4 mile timed run. Just see where they are compared to a fresh 4 mile timed run. Watching a video of someone who went through Buds, and he mentioned that 4 mile timed runs also use nautical miles, which would put it at 4.6. No. If you're on land, you use regular miles. If you're in the water, you use nautical miles, which means your mile swim is a 2,000-yard swim. Your 2 mile swim is a 4,000-yard swim. I've never used nautical miles on a map. You use nautical miles on a chart. And there's a difference. Pretty weak strength-wise, but I don't want to lose strength I got during the winter cycle. Body weight bench, 5 reps. Body weight squat, 8 reps. Yeah, you know what? That's not great. I mean, it's good that you can do it for sure, but, you know, I always try to get people in the double digit range whenever they are doing body weight lifts. So my recommendation is maybe don't go into the, you definitely need the block periodization model if you are going into the cows and cardio model, or you know, doing another strength cycle is what I would recommend for you if you were here locally. You know, so you could still add in some mileage of running. You just got to watch what you're eating and eat more because you're burning the extra calories. So I would probably still focus on strength unless you need a break from focusing on strength too. That's another key issue, because when you're working purely on strength and building mass, it's easy to get burned out and tired doing that, because it is a central nervous system overload process that takes a lot of recovery to do. So put it this way, if you're one of my guys here locally, I would say let's do at least another 6 weeks of the winter lift cycle. Also, I was thinking about following your cows and cardio and not the spring, because I'm a beginner intermediate at running. Well, I mean, you could still do the winter lift cycle and just slowly start progressing your running to that. Like, we got to remember, these are not personalized training programs, right? These are guides that you have to personalize for what you're able to do. Like, if you're super strong, this probably won't be that challenging for you. So you may want to add some reps or add some more sets, add some weight, but maybe the running's hard for you to be able to do that and run 12 miles a week that's in the winter lift cycle. So you may have to drop that down to 6, right? If you're a bad runner or if you get injured while you run. So, you know, there are things that you may have to make changes to. In fact, I've written an article about it. You can find it, Adapting Programs to Your Level of Fitness. And it came out as a test article that I was testing. So that's the name of it. And you can see it right here. It's titled Test Article. But the actual title of the article is Adapting Programs to Your Level of Performance and Still Reach Goals. You got to learn how to do that unless you do some personalized training programs, which are completely different. They're personalized for you. Do you prefer toe or heel strike? Neither one. I'm kind of like right in the middle. I mean, I will say this. I do, when I'm sprinting, my heels never touch the ground. It's all toe. If I'm running downhill, my heels touch the ground before anything, seems like. So I tend to run downhill very slowly. But when I'm flat, I tend to run midfoot strike. But you need to find what works for you and doesn't cause pain. I've been injury free from running for almost 2 decades now. A lot of it has to do with changing shoes every 4 to 6 months, sometimes less than 4 months, depending on my running cycles. Getting a good pair of shoes, you know, and part of that's hit or miss too, depending on, you know, where you're getting your shoes. I've been listening to you and Jeff for years now. Thanks for the info. Are you connecting with anyone from Los Angeles that runs similar programs to workouts like you and Jeff? No, not in Los Angeles. There is a guy in San Diego. If you go to the heroesoftomorrow.org website, you'll see some contact information for guys out there. But I'm not sure how often he does it. I think he might be a weekend guy, and he's a former SEAL that runs like just groups through like log PT and stuff like that, hitting the beach, getting wet and sandy. I'm preparing for a mile and a half for the military test in my country. Currently around 10, but trying to hit 9:45. Should I go hard in the beginning and try hold on or run a negative split? Good question. I personally don't like either one of those options. I am personally a goal pacer. So, for instance, if I'm trying to hit a 9-minute mile and a half, I'm going to run that first lap at 90 seconds. I'm going to run the next lap at 90 seconds, which is a 3-minute half mile. That's a 6-minute mile. That's a 9-minute mile and a half. I am a trained to that goal pace. And if I got any juice left on that sixth lap, I'll try to beat it by 10 seconds. That is my strategy for running. I'm not saying it is the only one. Obviously, they're a negative split. I do negative split workouts just because they're hard and I like them. We'll run on this trail that's just a straight railroad track. You run 10 minutes down, and wherever you are, you stop. And then you try to get back to where you started faster than 10 minutes. That's a fun negative split workout that we like to do. It gets you 20 minutes of running. You do it fast. You got yourself probably 3 miles, maybe more. It's a good little workout. So for you, my suggestion would be at a 9:45, let's do the math. So if you did 95 seconds, that's going to give you a 9:30. So somewhere between 95 seconds, a minute 35 and a minute 37. So you could probably get a 9:45 if you master the pace of a minute 35, between a minute 35 and a minute 40. Don't go higher than a minute 40 every lap. Meaning don't go slower than a minute 40 and don't go faster than a minute 35. Where most people screw up on this run is they hit that first run like, you know, they're running a race and they get that first lap in like 75 seconds. Now they can't maintain 90 seconds if they even had to. So that was me. And I realized I just started off too fast and I found my pace. And I started running my pace. And that first lap, everybody's taken off, right? That aren't following your goal pace model. But I wound up lapping them, you know, by lap 4. And I get my 9-minute mile and a half. And they might have run their first lap in maybe an 8-minute pace, mile and a half pace, you know, which is a 5-minute mile. But I just kept my 6-minute mile steady. Next thing you know, I'm lapping them and they get like a 10:45 because they just burn themselves out. So think about it as that form of strategy and try it out. See if it works. I've got a lot written about goal pace running. So my workouts would be like go run 8 400-meter runs at a minute 35 and then go run, you know, the next time you do it, you know, try to get that to where it's easy. Maybe walk 100 meters for a rest. You can do another workout like that with 800s and see if you can do it in 3 minutes, 10 seconds to 15 seconds. And that probably gets you right where you need to be. But yeah, you mastering those 800 meters at 310, 315. You string a couple of those together. Next thing you know, you got a 945 or faster. So that's how I do it. Good question, though. See, I sent a bunch of links there. Let's see. Is it possible to improve your kick in the water with rocket fins by just doing flutter kicks? And how many reps should I do? Yes. We usually do sets of 50 4-count flutter kicks. It's going to help you because it is all hip for sure. I mean, that's why we do it. I mean, that is why we do flutter kicks, because you're going to put on a pair of fins and come really close to mimicking that same movement of doing, you know, ab hip flexor work flutter kicks. Do you have any days when you don't want to get out of bed? Pain, fatigue, what does that mean and what do you do about it? Yes. In fact, this morning, once again, I was sore from Saturday. My butt is really sore. And I got up out of bed, or first, I didn't even get up out of bed. I had my sweatpants sitting next to my bed that I was going to put on. Went to put those on, and it's in the dark, so I put them on backwards. So I'm all pissed off that I got to bend over, you know, undo the elastic down by my ankles to get them off without pulling off my socks. Wound up pulling off my socks. So my morning started off really awkward, and I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to have to go through that. And that was painful. All of that was like not comfortable. I wasn't necessarily fatigued, but I could have definitely turned around and gone back to bed if I wasn't disciplined enough to go and get that workout done. Now, it also helps that I have 15, 20 people waiting on me to do this workout with them. So I have kind of a built-in buddy system that allows me to, you know, be the coach for these guys, and I do not miss workouts. It's just something I do not do. If I miss something, it's because I either went somewhere with my family or business, or maybe one of my guys getting or graduating from a program that I get to go see. Like this weekend, last weekend, I went to Quantico to watch a Marine graduate TBS, and then I'm going to go watch four of them graduate OCS at Quantico next week. So those are only days I miss. And then I still work out that day. I just don't do it at 6 o'clock because I got to be on the road. But let me tell you my secret to this is I work out when I don't feel like it because I don't feel like it. Does that make any sense? I almost get pissed at myself because I'm actually having these obtrusive thoughts of like, hey, just go back to bed. You know, don't even worry about your sweatpants. You know, all these things are like going through your head. And you're like, I got pissed off that I was thinking that way. And I went and did it because of that. I don't always have those thoughts. I just happen to have them this morning. Usually I get up out of bed and, you know, being 54 years old, I have pains just because I have pains and, you know, a life well lived. So those usually don't bother me, but today it did. And I was pissed off at myself for even having those thoughts. So I went and worked out anyway. And got a couple PRs. So, boom. What do you think? Do you have any advice on someone that is skinny fat to lose small belly? You know, it really comes down to you moving and eating properly. Now, there's an old saying called move more, eat less, sleep better, less stress. You know, all of those can help you with losing weight and recovering and, you know, reduction of cortisol. You know, all of those things can help you do that. But in the end, it really comes down to you. At the end of the day, you have burned more calories than you have consumed. And you can do that a variety of ways. You can do it through cardio activity. You can do it through mixing cardio activity with weight training and calisthenics. You can do it with only weight lifting and calisthenics. It's kind of up to you how you want to do it. I personally like to mix it all in together. I like to lift. I like to do cardio. I like to do calisthenics. I like to do cardio. And I do that all the time. And then the hardest part is not the hour workout of the day that you just made it through. It's the other 23 hours of the day where you could be eating something, but you have to be a little more disciplined and just say, you know what? I'm not going to have that bag full of M&Ms, or I'm not going to eat that candy bar. You know, I don't need a second helping of Chipotle burrito. You just want, it's fine, right? So, yeah, we tend to overeat and we tend to undermove. So, move more, eat less, but eat good. Don't eat crap food. Further to the previous question about body weight lifts being good double digits, what would be some good target strength goals if my only equipment is pull-up dips, kettlebells, and not full barbell gym? PST numbers, you know, I'd like to hit 20 pull-ups, you know, be able to do, I think I did 40 dips the other day, nonstop. I remember because one of my buddies beat me, he did 50. And he's 10 years older than me, little bastard. He crushed me. I think he set me up and was planning for that one, though. kettlebells, you know, I don't really have a particular kettlebell max to do, or, you know, we just typically do a lot of good reps of them. Farmer walks, swings, snatches. We do dumbbell, you know, kettlebell rows with them. Oh, RDLs. We'll do some RDLs. But really, it's more of a rep thing than it is a one rep max thing for me. And it's not really a max. It's just 20 kettlebells, swings, you know, do that five times in a workout. So it's more of a cumulative effect of kettlebells. Morning, read your article on workouts. If you don't have a pool, it's hard for me to get to the pool 5 days a week. So I plan to extend my normal 2 to 3 days to double volume. Yep. I think we talked about that last week. Yeah, I would agree. Double it up. If you get to the pool, you know, do a leg day and upper body day swim. That means like a 50-50 no fin workout. Work on your technique of and conditioning of swimming for 500, and then put on a pair of fins and swim for 1,000 to 2,000. Got yourself a swim workout there that should last you a couple of days till the next time you're in the pool. Do you think this is smart? I've been combining the Force Recon workout and the winter lift cycle to do so I could have that strength, or is it too much? You know, I would have said just stick with one and not the other. But if you can handle it, there's nothing wrong with being able to do that. But you're going to notice some burnout. And you got to also realize those things aren't meant to be put side by side and do together. So there may be a day in the Spec Ops book that you're doing upper body, whereas the winter lift cycle is a lower body. And then the next day it flips, the next day it flips, next day it flips. Next thing you know, you've done 5 days in a row of legs and 5 days in a row of upper body. That's not wise. You know, you want to organize it in a way to where you have an upper body day that matches your you know, calories and cardio of that day. If you're lifting, you have a leg day that matches your, you know, cardio activity. If you're running, you're rucking, you're doing hills, you're doing sand, you're doing squats and lunges, fireman carries, stuff like that. You want a leg day to match that, you know, that same day. Otherwise, you have a tendency of just putting all of your, you know, you, like all your whole week is burnout of the same muscle groups every single day. So be smart when you do that. My question is, of all the replacements, bike, Tabata, rowing, which is your favorite to replace swimming or simulate swimming? Good question. I personally like bike pyramids and elliptical Tabatas. For some reason, I don't like rowing that much. It's not that fun. But the bike pyramid's awesome, where you increase the resistance of that bike, but keep your 80 RPMs the same the whole time. And you increase the resistance every minute on the minute. So let's say you start off at level one. In 10 minutes, you're at level 10. Maintaining 80, usually not that hard. It's kind of a warm-up. And then when you get into your teens and up to 20, now it becomes hard. You got to stand up. You got a puddle underneath you. It really sucks. Those are my favorites. And you want to put out in them. As you know, as hard as swimming can be and as hard as running can be, when you're replacing it with biking or other non-impact activities, you want to be as breathing as hard as you are when you're doing those other activities. So keep pushing. So in week one, day five of calories and cardio, you don't have a rep count for squats and push presses. You know what? Probably a typo. Look at previous workouts and see what I put in there. I'm not sure why it fell off the page, but it looks like it did. I'll probably update that this week. I'm doing some updates on all my programs, by the way. And in fact, I just got the cover back from I'm going to change the workout in Navy SEAL phase one, phase two and three, and it's going to have a new cover and everything in it. So it's going to be a whole different workout. Check out that. So that's the new Navy PST phase two. I needed to update it a little bit because there have been some changes. But yeah, this is the new cover that'll be out this week. It's going to have 16 weeks in it versus 12 of what the latest one had. And it's going to be part PST prep as well as the human performance test prep. And for all these groups, so it's SEAL, SWIC, EOD, Diver, Rescue Swimmer, and SARC is a new group that is taking this test before they go to boot camp. So that is, I guess if there's something exciting going on right now, that's it. That's what I'm doing with that one. So what you see is phase one, Navy SEAL phase one is going away, and this is going to be the new one. And it's going to be better, bigger and better. So there you go. It's a completely different workout. I'm using the same kind of template, but I'm updating it so much. Adding mobility days, you know, things like that. Log PT events. But mainly it's focused on PST prep. It's phase two and three is going to be getting through buds and those selections, and those will be a lot harder with some of the longer swims, longer runs, and things like that. So there you go. Those are my new updates. Stand by. It'll be out this week. Do you usually do lightweight shoulder workout before as a warm-up or at the end? I do it both. Sometimes I'll do it in the middle, beginning, end. But I usually do it on upper body days. I usually don't do it every day, but you could. It's 5 pound dumbbells. It's pretty easy. Let's see. Even the smallest setbacks mess me up in the morning. Yeah. Throughout the day, progressively gets easier. I get warmed up and get started into the hardest part. Yeah, I would agree. Can I email you all my fitness experience and goals to get a good suggestion on which program to purchase? Sure. A lot of people do that. Happy to assist. That's why I put my email address out there. In fact, you can see it right here, right there. In that little ticker down at the bottom, stu@stusmith.com. Email me. You got questions? Email me. You got videos you want to send me of you swimming? Send it to me. A lot of questions. I got to wrap this up here. You guys are killing it. Great questions today, by the way. I appreciate it. Caesar says he refuses to move past week one of Cows and Cardio to fully complete the PST. That's fine. Nothing wrong with that. You know, if you need help with that swim, it's probably a technique issue. So send me a video of you swimming 50 meters and we might be able to get you through that test with fixing some technique. Also want to thank you for the podcast. Had some knee pain and bought some ultras along with toe spacers. Knee pain non-existent. Nice. Yeah, you know, I think it's ultras. ALTRAs. Got the Ultra. That's my latest running shoe, the Ultra. So this is what I'm going to do as I progress into the 20s and 30s. And I may get up to 40 miles a week this cycle. Usually get up to like 35, but may push a few weeks at 40 in these new shoes. They feel great, though. So John really enjoyed the 12 weeks to Buds. That was back in the day. It's still a good one. Still works. A lot of people love that one. Got a lot of compliments with girls from a six pack. Oh, that's awesome. when are y'all starting spring cycle? I am going to try my best to keep up. Spring cycle. Today is week 13 of the winter lift cycle. So my plan is to start the spring cycle next week. So when it's springtime, which today is the first day of spring, we are almost going to be either changing to the spring cycle during spring or maybe wait a week or two depending on the group if we needed to lift more. I think everybody's ready to move on to cows and cardio with some supplemental lifting. All right, let's see. Last question, and I got to go. It's been over an hour. There are some days where I don't have time for both cows and cardio. What would you choose the days in between? My advice would be, if you can't do them both separately, mix them together. So, like, go for a run, but every couple of minutes, stop and do squats and lunges or do push-ups and pull-ups, those type of things. So that is how I would do it. Or pick the one that you suck at the most. Never neglect a weakness. If you have a choice, go with the weakness. That's my rule. All right, folks, I got to write an article. Get this one out. I'll talk about it tomorrow because it's very important. A lot of people are going to start running, increasing their running volume in the next few weeks. And 3 weeks from now, everybody asks me about shin splints. So I'm going to give you some good rules on how to avoid those common running injuries. All right. So until next time, you guys go check out stusmithfitness.com. The code for 15% off is military15, or you can do live15. In fact, if you would, do live15. That way I know you came from the live feed that I send out. Just for future reference. LIVE15 saves 15%. Make sure you get the book or the ebook, depending on which one you want. Until next time, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good one.